right, it is time for one last episode of The Fifth Estate before we hit 2017. My name is Jay Caruso. I'm your host. Neil Dewing is still taking his sabbatical for the month, so he'll be back when we start back up in January. As always, before we get started, I always tell you we appreciate it when you go out to iTunes, kind of review the podcast. Give us a star rating, give us a review, we like that, and also tell everybody to subscribe. We appreciate that as well. So, time to finish off the year, and figured, you know, let's do an episode where we kind of review the year end, kind of talk about some of our favorite stuff, not do too much politics, but we'll do some. And so I have asked Ben Dominich of The Federalist to join me in closing out the year. So, Ben, thanks for joining me.
Jay, it's good to be with you. And again, you know, I always love that intro music. I have to say, I don't know about you, but one of the things that really saves me from getting tired of Christmas music is going back to the sort of Christmas with the Rat Pack classics,
right,
and everything like that. It just, if you're tired of the treacly pop Christmas songs, which by this point, I was, you know, having had basically a month of them, I don't know how anybody isn't. just like look up some of those old classics, because they're great and they're holiday, but they also don't have that kind of, you know, tambourine-esque sort of feel to them. And frankly, it will make you want to punch anybody who likes Happy Christmas War Is Over right in the face.
Yes.
Which is how you should feel around Christmas time anyway.
No, I think it was I was asking somebody about what was their favorite songs, and it's like, if it begins and ends really with Nat King Cole, the Christmas song with me, from it's like you said, it's not that kind of gooey kind of Christmas feel to it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if I had to pick one Christmas song, you know, above all the others, I would probably pick I'll Be Home for Christmas, just because of the evocation of kind of soldiers wanting to be home.
Sure.
and realizing they can't be.
Right.
But like if I had to boot one into the sun, it would be Happy Christmas War Is Over. Just cannot stand it. I feel like it should have a trigger warning beforehand.
Well, we'll get into some music. It was funny when I was kind of doing the research for this show, and I was kind of looking back at stuff, and I'm like looking at things that I like, TV and movies, and I got some music, and I'm like, man, there's not a lot of stuff that I really like that came out in 2016. So we'll start off with something better. We'll start off with movies, and I have seen a couple of movies that I really like. But let me start off with you first. You know, I had, just so people know, and they're probably gonna like, you know, curse at me and everything, and I haven't seen Rogue One yet.
Oh, what's wrong with you?
I knew it. See, I know.
Okay, so wait. No, I have a story to tell about this. So,
okay.
One of my friends, I think it's fair for me to call him a friend. I don't know if, you know, sort of if he reciprocates, but Jonathan Last, who writes for the Weekly Standard, I don't want to describe him as a recluse. He's just an introvert. He just doesn't get out that much. He doesn't go to things mostly, you know. He'll refer to me, you know, I'll see him about twice a year at events, and they'll say, oh, these are my two events for the year or something like that. He doesn't like to get out. And so I went and saw the screening of Rogue One before it came out. I emailed him afterwards and I said, you need to see this movie as soon as possible because I need to talk to you about this movie. And he responded, well, you know, I'm really busy because of the holidays and, you know, I've got family stuff going on. I'm just not sure I'm going to see it until like January or something like that. I'm like, Jonathan, you need to see this movie so we can talk about this movie. And so then he ultimately did see it like right after it came out. So clearly there was enough momentum sort of convincing him of positive reviews that he needed to see it. But Jay, I will say the same thing to you. You need to see it because we need to be able to talk about it. And you need to be able to talk about it with Neil in the new year.
I know, and I am going to see it. Not this weekend. I'm not going. I don't go to the movies on Christmas. That's just insanity. I did that one time, yeah. And I went thinking, Christmas. No one's going to go to the movies on Christmas. This is like 20 years ago, and it was. Then I found out it was like rude awakening that Christmas is like one of the single biggest days when people actually go to the movies. So yeah. I will likely go during the week, and I'll be able to get in when it's not going to be super crowded. I'm one of those people now that doesn't want to go when there's a bunch of kids. So I'll go find an 11 a.m. showing somewhere and sneak in and watch it then. So I will see it soon because everybody just keeps raving about it, and I don't want to get my expectations up too high and then go and see it and be disappointed.
Yeah, see, you're going to suffer from the opposite situation because, see, for most of the rest of us, we went in like with low expectations.
Right.
And then that sort of surprised us and has a lot of people, I think, actually overrating it a little bit.
Yeah. All right. So obviously, but then Rogue One is one of your favorite movies of the year, but anything else?
It is. I think it's hard to make a Star Wars movie. I think it's very challenging.
Yeah.
And this one has flaws, just like any other, sort of movie. I would argue that its flaws are sort of the same as Return of the Jedi, and the sort of like the middle portion doesn't really work. But the fact is that I think it is an enormous step up from The Force Awakens, which I found to be okay, but really just nostalgia driven. This is a different kind of movie, and what that really does is give me a lot of hope for these kind of standalone films. And I, it seems pointless at this point to have a spoiler alert, but my attitude going in was I hoped that the ending that they had would happen because it would be such a statement. Sometimes people deserve to have their faith rewarded. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is really happening. So it's well worth your time. You should absolutely go see it. The other movies that I liked this year, I didn't see, I have to admit, because of the politics, because of being pulled around, I saw fewer films in theaters this year than I have, I believe, in any year of my life. Just the fewest in theater sort of things, and some of them were kind of throwaways and disappointments like Suicide Squad. But I have to tell you, I was very impressed by... I was very impressed by Deadpool.
Oh, okay.
which was just sort of a revelation, in the sense that like nobody really expected it to be anything, and then it turned out to be kind of a different take on the genre, which probably ended up killing Suicide Squad, frankly. And then I have to say, Hell or High Water was very good. It has some plot flaws, but the performances in it are really excellent, particularly Ben Foster, who shows an uncanny ability to play a redneck kind of to the hilt. And I have to say, I think, this was sort of a year when where movies didn't really go the way that people expected them to. Right. Where you had kind of this attitude towards Batman versus Superman that was sort of different than the defects turned out to be different than people expected. Civil War turned out to be kind of different than people expected. And I think that, ultimately at the end of the year, we might look back and sort of say there were a lot of just, near misses this year. And I think that in a catalog of sort of near misses, Hell or High Water is sort of it's a small film. It feels, it's close to sort of its roots in terms of its West Texas experience. And I also think that there were, just a number of really good performances turned in this year. Nicole Kidman in Lion, which if people haven't seen it, is coming out soon. It's a small movie, but it has some great performances in it, and it's based on a true story. I wish that Passengers work. It doesn't, unfortunately. But it is one of these things where, again, it's kind of a near miss. It's like this could almost work if you just made some tweaks.
Right. Yeah. Hell or High Water was one of my favorites of the year.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there were some plot issues, but I think the performances of everybody, Ben Foster really stands out. He is a terrific actor.
So underrated.
Yes.
Really. I mean, if you look back at the guy's catalog, he's just very good in virtually everything that he's in, and he takes small roles and makes them big.
Yes.
And I like that about him.
Yeah, he was really good. It was a 3:10 to Yuma. He had a smaller role, but he that was excellent.
I don't like posses.
And he played that psycho in it was actually a Bruce Willis movie, Hostage, I think that was. It was called. And he that movie was kind of ridiculous in so many ways, but he was really good in it. So, but yeah, but Hell or High Water, of course, you know, you have Jeff Bridges, who has become kind of this, he's taken on this kind of grizzled actor role with, you know, and enjoys it. You know, it's not, I love seeing actors like him and say Tommy Lee Jones, who accept that they're getting older and don't try to do movies where they're, you know, still clinging to their youth. They're like, okay.
You know, I'll add one more person to that, which is just that I never used to like Kevin Costner, but as Kevin Costner has gotten older and sort of shifted to this character actor phase of his career, I find myself liking him more. He's, you know, he has a, they have a new movie coming out with him that's rated PG. That's about sort of this, sort of this missing part of the NASA story that includes Janelle Monáe and a couple of other people. And he's playing kind of this grizzled, you know, NASA character.
Okay.
And I don't know, it's sort of weird. It's just, I never really liked him as like a, you know, the romantic, you know, love interest sort of when he was younger. But a lot of these guys, when they get a little bit of age on them and they start playing these character roles that have a little more ability for them to chew, you know, to chew the scenery and stuff, you know, and Bridges absolutely does that in that movie.
Yes. Yeah. And Costner is one of those actors that he's sometimes he's better behind the camera than he's in any, and he's better an actor when he's directing. So, you know, Open Range is probably one of my favorite Westerns of all time.
That's a great one.
It's a terrific movie and beautifully shot. And, you know, Robert Duvall just is absolutely terrific in that movie. So, you know, it's kind of like the, I call it the Ben Affleck effect. Ben Affleck is an outstanding director, and he seems to be better in the
movie. Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah.
it turns out he was the smart one.
And now Casey Affleck, his younger brother, is becoming this, you know, bona fide, you know, superstar. Maybe not a superstar, but the kind of actor who's going to start winning a lot of awards, I think. You know, he started out, you know, those little roles in Good Will Hunting and things of that nature, and Clerks, not Clerks, Chasing Amy. So interesting to see how that goes.
What else did you like?
I liked Arrival. As I've gotten older, I have more of appreciation for like true science fiction, not necessarily. I think somebody described the Star Wars movies a lot of times as a Western that it takes place in outer space.
Yeah, it's a space opera, you know. Let me refine that. It was a space opera until you see Rogue One,
and then
it's the Guns of the Navarone.
But you know, I warn people about, you know, and I did the review for the movie, and I told people about it. It's like, if you're going to see Arrival expecting to see something like Independence Day, you're going to be sorely disappointed. It's nothing like that at all.
Oh my gosh, we had an Independence Day movie this year.
We did.
I totally forgot about that.
Did you like it?
No, I didn't see it.
Oh, you didn't see it? I didn't see it either. I saw the trailer for it, and I was like, this, I said, you know, first of all, they're waiting too long to try and capitalize on the popularity of the original. Everybody looks too damn old. I said, this is just silly. I said, I'm not even going to bother. Yeah. I didn't see it. But Arrival was great. Great performances. And, you know, it's one of those, you know, you can't really, I don't want to give away the ending for anybody who hasn't seen it, because, you know, there is a twist and spoilers. And it was hard writing the review for that by not giving, I don't like doing reviews where there's spoilers. To me, it's kind of pointless. Yeah. If, like, you put at the beginning, there are spoilers, half your audience is going to be like, well, I'm not going to read it.
Yeah.
So it's hard, but it was excellent, and it was done very well. And I felt like, even though there was kind of like a twist at the end, there wasn't really, sometimes movies, they manipulate the audience when they do a twist, and then you kind of like, you're like, ah, you know, I didn't see that coming, because you hit it, you did this, and this one I didn't see coming, but I didn't feel that way at the end of it. Did you see it?
I did see it. I liked it. I thought it was good. I didn't have quite the spiritual, emotional connection with it that I think some other folks had. I wondered, did you get a chance to see The Nice Guys?
No. In fact, I keep seeing that, and it's like, it's one of these things. Yeah, I love, you know, the whole, you know, so the return to the 80s buddy movie.
I was saying before about near misses? It's like the definition of that.
Oh,
it's like, it's almost a good movie. But there's some choices they make along the way that make it sort of messier than it needed to be. And maybe, I think one of the things that I've come to appreciate lately is just that it's really hard to pull off dark comedy. You know, the Coen brothers do it well. I mean, yeah. Hail Caesar is like a perfect example of this. You know, it's like it is a very, it's a, you know, quality dark comedy kind of thing. But dark comedy is hard to pull off in general. And I think that in this case, it was sort of ill-suited for the approach that they had. And it was, you know, it's easy to sort of make them too violent, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. You know, where you need to have kind of the level of violence that's still at silly as opposed to being, you know, over the top.
Right.
And I think that was unfortunately, you know, not quite where they got. But yeah, I mean, I have to say though, it was a better year for TV than it was for movies, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. But let me just, before we go into the TV, a couple of people on Twitter, I asked them to kind of answer. Let's see, Andrew Mullins. I'm not sure. Some of these people I know, some I don't. I guess they're followers. But somebody said, Hail Caesar. There were a lot of people saying Rogue One, which seemed to be the most popular choice. Let's see if there's anything else here. Hacksaw Ridge, which I haven't seen yet.
So I feel really bad because I saw Mel's acting movie that he came out with this year, Blood Father.
Yes.
Which is just great.
Yes,
you know, kind
it
of
is.
Fun, you know,
I saw it.
Motorcycle madness type thing. But I did not see Hacksaw Ridge, mostly just because of timing. It was just sort of, it came out at a time when that was very busy. And so I haven't had the chance to see it in theaters, and I hope to actually catch it before it goes away from it, because it seems like the kind of thing that, you know, is worth seeing there. But can we just give a shout out to, you know, Mel's back, you know?
Yeah, like, he is. Like, He is
officially back. 2016, officially, Mel Gibson is back.
Yeah, and, so, you know, I thought it was ridiculous. Of course, you know, he has this movie come out that's critically acclaimed, and, you know, there's Oscar buzz, and he did the acting movie, like you said, and all of a sudden people start asking again about, you know, when is he going to show remorse? When they start talking about his issues, and it's kind of like, you know, the guy made a comeback. Let's, you know, he's not sitting there, you know, going around every day still talking about, you know, saying anti-Semitic things. This is a long time ago. He said he was sorry. It's, you know, let's give the guy a chance. I mean, this is one of these things where it's like you like to see these comebacks, you know.
Look,
Robert Downey Jr.,
crazy,
those guys.
But damn, does he know story structure.
Oh, definitely. definitely. So let's see. There's a couple others here. Love and Friendship. Somebody said that. A couple of people.
Okay. Wait. No. I saw that. Okay. If you like sort of, so let's say that you don't really like costume things, you know, Sense and Sensibility or Emma or, you know, any of these other Jane Austen adaptations. Okay. Love and Friendship is basically about this conniving Machiavellian bitch goddess, okay, who sort of turns society on its head in order to achieve what she wants to, and just does it all along the way being just sort of manipulative and snarky, and it's, I don't know, it's, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very funny, but it's also kind of confined by being, you know, a period piece, and it doesn't have kind of the sweep of some of the other movies we're talking about. Oh. I mean, like Deadpool, obviously, which is an epic.
All right. So let's see. Andrea Ruth says Rogue One. Carla Jacobs says Rogue One seems to be far and away the choice. Somebody actually chose The Nice Guys as the best movie of the year. So that's, there you go.
Yeah.
But you're right. Television is kind of where it was at, and I think that's been the case for the last several years now. It's been a while for when I think television has far exceeded Hollywood in terms of, you know, writing and directing and acting. I mean, you go back and I'm old enough to remember this. You know, it's like actors, the only actors that went into television in say like the 80s were people like who would appear on like The Love Boat and Fantasy Island, and, you know, they weren't really stars ever to begin with. They were kind of like more like B-list actors, and this is like, okay, their last vestige is to kind of sit there and go on The Love Boat or go on Fantasy Island.
Yeah.
But now you see Oscar-nominated actors and actresses doing television because they want, you know, they want to be part of something that is big, and we saw that with, I think originally one of the series that saw that was like The Shield, Glenn Close was on for I think one season, and some other people. So,
an incredible season. By
yeah,
the way.
And you know, one of the best shows. And I always like to bring this up whenever I talk about The Shield. I said it's absolutely the one show that had the greatest series finale I have ever seen, because it did not cheap the audience. It didn't go in, it didn't take an easy route. It was perfect the way they did it. So anyway.
So I have to say, I have to just interject because I didn't know you were also a S.H.I.E.L.D. fan.
Okay.
One of my favorite shows of all time. It has multiple fantastic performances in it. I still think that, like, Walton Goggins deserves a Lifetime Achievement Award for the fact that he's been in two great underrated shows, The S.H.I.E.L.D. and Justified.
Right.
You know, and frankly, I think, you know, that Walton Goggins, you know, just like is in sort of a class of his own. I wish he was on social media. He isn't. One of the things that always has struck me about The Shield is sort of the combination of these very dark places of the experience that these cops and these units, you know, had, you know, based on, you know, in many cases, real stories, but, you know, contrasted with this home life situation. I was walking through DFW airport a couple of years ago, and I looked over and there was a Chili's with like the seating that like runs along the area that you're walking. I'm like, oh, that's Vic Mackey's daughter from The Shield, like eating at that Chili's. And then I looked over and it's like, oh, that's Vic Mackey sitting next to her. Cause I realized, oh wait, that's his daughter, his actual daughter in real life.
Right.
And I still don't know like what, you know, his thought process was, you know, saying I'm going to cast my daughters in this show that's gonna have all this terrible stuff in it. But he was the nicest guy. He signed an envelope for me. And, cause I collect signatures and honestly, I still think that show is incredibly underrated and has produced, you know, there's a lot of good crime drama out there, but I feel like it deserves more praise than it gets. But I do have opinions about TV this year, if you want to shift to that.
Yeah, let's do that.
So, I don't mean to speak out of turn, but virtually all the good TV this year was on Netflix.
Okay.
Stranger Things,
yes.
The Crown, BoJack Horseman, those were all fantastic and just really well done and sort of surprising in how well they were done. And then I would just add to that, I think The Night Manager was extremely good. You know, it's more than just Hiddleston's tryout to be Bond. Hugh Laurie is excellent in it, and it solves a lot of the problems that Le Carré normally has when it comes to endings.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, I just feel like, you know, generally, you know, when it comes to TV, I like things that have, stories that are very, complicated and built on sort of lots of different levels.
Yes.
And Rick and Morty, the cartoon show, which is on Adult Swim, really managed to do that with its second season this year, which was, very impressive and spawned all sorts of different memes and things like that. And if you haven't seen the show, let me just give one anecdote, which is that there's an episode about midway through where there are giant heads that show up out of the sky and yell at the Earth, show me what you got. And it turns out that they are aliens who are essentially running a music reality show where the planet that delivers the best music survives. And I was at the Austin City Limits Outdoor Festival this year, and there was my favorite sign. You know, all sorts of people are kind of carrying signs around, and my favorite sign was a giant version of that head that some guy was carrying around who he would plant in front of the stages, you know, as if the artist is performing, you know, based on whether the planet is going to survive or not.
Wow.
That's good. That's well done. So that's my best TV for you.
Stranger Things, of course, it was excellent. Not only just for the, you know, of course for me, you know, the 80s nostalgia was great, but it was still a very good show. And you're right. And I think a lot of the best.
I bought the soundtrack for it on vinyl. It's excellent.
Oh, nice.
If you like synth, if synth gets you in the mood, you gotta pick it up.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll have to get that. There's those, and I think there are two series that I watched on Amazon that I think are terrific. Bosch, crime drama series. You know, you talk about shows, and this is and you and I are on the same wavelength when it comes to this kind of television, which is the reason why I really love a lot of the BBC series when they come out, I get to watch those, because some people complain the pacing is slow, and I say no, the pacing is deliberate. It's not slow. They're letting the story unfold, which is terrific. You know, I don't need chase scenes and shoot 'em up scenes and everything that's happening all the time. And Bosch was one of those series that does that.
It was very well done. Very well done. Remind me the name of the lead actor again.
Oh, what do
you recall off the top of your head?
Titus Welliver.
Is that it? Titus Welliver. Yeah. So I had always viewed him as like, he'd always been a character actor for me before, like always a guy in the background, but in the foreground, he's excellent. He's like a more grizzled Kiefer Sutherland or something like that.
Right.
Like it's just a very well done version of it. And it works as more than just a police procedural. It works on more levels than that. So I totally agree with you. That was very good TV.
Yeah. And the author of the books actually came out like 25 years ago, something like that. Mm-hmm. And so I was watching, they were showing the trailer for like the third season that's coming up. And he said, you know, he goes, this is so weird. He goes, I'm sitting here doing this. And he goes, I'm watching this scene unfold. And the third season is actually based upon the first book. And the reason why they said they did that is because they couldn't just kind of jump into the series without getting to know the character. So the first two seasons were actually based on later books. So the third season is actually based on the first book. He goes, because now you have a sense of who the character is, we can go ahead and we can do that. And they're shooting this initial scene, and he's like, this is just so odd. He goes, I wrote this like 25, 26 years ago, had no idea that it was even going to be published, let alone turn into, become a television show down the road.
Well, that's fantastic. I have not read the books, and I don't really plan to, because the TV series is so good that I feel like I want to see it before I would go back and read them. I do hope at some point that somebody starts doing new adaptations of Ross McDonald, who's one of the great underappreciated detective story writers. And they made a couple movies based on his work with Paul Newman, but they weren't very good, even despite the fact that they had Newman in them. It's kind of a Judge Roy Bean situation where it's just miscast.
Right.
And so I hope that they kind of start delving into these. Let's find detective stories from 30 years ago.
Yeah, perfect. Another show that I really enjoyed on Amazon is Emeril Lagasse's show, Eat the World. Emeril. Now, I have always been a fan of like cooking shows, but the problem is that over the last, you know, 10 years or so, everything has kind of shifted to this reality show, you know, contest theme. And it's just kind of like, I just want to see people who enjoy
food. Here is the ingredient.
Yeah, exactly. And this show does that. So it's Emeril Lagasse with other chefs going to different areas of the world. So they go to like, you know, they go to Italy where they're, you know, they're looking for the best pizza in the world. And they're him and Mario Batali go to Shanghai to find, you know, to find dumplings. And rather than the usual, you know, Emeril is in this one is very kind of just kind of engaged in watching people work and the way they're cooking and the ingredients and everything like that. So if you really are a person that loves cooking and you're, you know, have an appreciation for food, this is a great show to watch. It's not the whole bam kind of stuff and all of that.
Well, I will have to check that out because I do love cooking and I cook for myself almost every day and for my girlfriend when she's in town and for my family. And so I'll have to check it out. I like shows that actually give me instruction that is applicable to my situation.
Right.
So I enjoy watching Anthony Bourdain. He's entertaining. He's interesting. You know, he's very funny, but I don't actually gain any knowledge from watching Anthony Bourdain about how to make something.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, that looks really tasty. You know, I'll have to eat that if I'm ever in that odd place that you're in, you know, but I prefer the stuff that is just sort of like, here's, you know, here are tricks to make a better coq au vin, or here is a better, you know, way to poach an egg, or here is a better way to poach fish, or here's a better way to do X, Y, Z. I've been on an Asian kick lately, and so I actually went back and streamed a couple of Alton Brown episodes of Good Eats about Asian noodles and Asian spices.
Okay.
And there were like three or four things in there where, oh, I didn't know that, and that's actually useful. And so I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it's really good. And I kind of miss the Alton Brown show, that Good Eats. I remember I used to watch it and I used to think, this is kind of annoying. And then I realized now, as you know, and then I started, if I don't cook as much as I'd like to, but it, when I do, it is good to know about that kind of thing. And I always like shows like Tyler, what the heck is his last name? I just forgot his last name. He had a show called Tyler's Ultimate. And it was a half hour show, and he cooked up things that were relatively simple, but they were really good, like a, you know, roasted tomato soup or shrimp scampi, things of that nature. That were, you know, the ingredients were always good, but he always made it very simple to kind of follow along. I don't want to do anything that's super complex either. If I ever am going to cook, you know, I just want to.
So perhaps a future guest on your fantastic podcast could be Christopher Kimball, who's come on with us a couple of times. Used to run America's Test Kitchen, is now running Milk Kitchen in Boston, and is the founder of Cooks Illustrated. And he, one of the things that he really stresses is, we don't do fancy ethnic stuff. What we're trying to do is teach people how to do the basics, do the things that they're going to cook for themselves, for their family. So these are all things that are meant to be eaten by, you know, 2 to 6 people.
Right.
You know, basically. And I find that to be extremely useful, because what you can come out with is, okay, here's how to make a really good bolognese that if you just follow these instructions, you're not going to screw it up. And you know, particularly if it's going to be something that takes a lot of ingredients and a lot of time, which I think good Italian sauce really does, then that's the sort of thing that, you know, you want more of that. Scientific testing and everything like along those lines. But as a television product, America's Test Kitchen is not as good as, or as entertaining, I should say, as some of these other things. It's a lot more fun to watch Anthony Bourdain go out into the middle of nowhere and kill a pig with a spear.
Yeah. Yeah. And if anybody's listening, they want to get it. I don't know if you have the book, The Food Lab. I did pick that up, which is an excellent.
I bought that for my mother last Christmas.
It's an excellent book. It really is great, because I like the whole idea of him going through and explaining why certain things happen. You know, it's, why is the meat going to do this? And why is this egg do this? And what is the, why do you do this at this temperature? So he explains it all, which is fantastic. So it's a really great book.
The opposite of Gordon Ramsay in like every
respect. Yeah. But, you know, it's funny. We had talked about, you know, one of the things we said, we wanted to get a chef on the podcast, so we'll have to connect with you on that one.
So I just want to give you an example that I ate at La Grenouille in New York last week, which is a classic, you know, French restaurant, and I had oxtail there, and it was amazing. I mean, it's, you know, top 5 sort of lifetime meal kind of thing.
Wow.
But what I love is the ability to come back and look and find, like, you know, a recipe that says, okay, oxtail is really challenging. Here's how you do it. And, you know, I understand that, you know, for different people, you know, it's like, you know, maybe you don't want to try, you know, sort of a risky thing, risk having a dish fail. But for me, I really like to, you know, take a stab at getting it. Because if you get it right, then you can make it for your friends, you can make it for your family. And it's one of these dishes that's like, good, you know, this is now in my arsenal of things I know how to make.
There you go.
Without as much challenge as others. And I think finding just a handful of those is just really good as a cook.
There we go. See, we've converted over to a cooking show here on this episode. All right, so let's see what a couple of people on Twitter are saying about favorite TV. Of course, a lot of people saying, oh, let's see, Westworld, Stranger Things is popular, Westworld again.
Should we talk about Westworld? Have you?
I haven't seen Westworld yet. I have HBO, and I just haven't had a chance to watch it. It's one of these things where, you know, it's like you see all these different series and you want to watch them. And now that I've kind of almost given up on The Walking Dead, maybe I'll go
you
back
should.
And watch.
Give up on it. I gave up on it after I think season 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not regretted it at all, like at all.
I've been watching it up until last season and the first couple of episodes of this season. And the Negan character at the end of last year was a very terrifying, scary mm-hmm. character in the first episode. But there is no character arc. He's the same person every time he appears on screen. And it's like, okay, the suave, kind of joking, menacing character guy that's, you know, one step away from clubbing you to death is, yeah. you know, I'm already bored by it.
I predict you will like Westworld, but you will think it is too slow, because that was basically my opinion. Okay. And I felt like it went in a direction I didn't really anticipate or like as much as I felt like there were more interesting directions for it to go. It's a very well-made show, and the acting in it is excellent. Particularly Anthony Hopkins.
Well, yeah. See, there you go. Anthony Hopkins doing a television series.
Yeah. Yes. HBO, exactly.
But still TV.
But I will just say to you that when it comes to some of these series, I am very much I'm opposed to early adoption. I like waiting until it at least gets renewed before I'm watching episode one. You know, with the exception of some of these things that come along on Netflix or. You know, on some of these other streaming networks where it's like you already know that it's going to be good or the quality is going to be high. But for instance, I have to say, honestly, prior to 2016, I had not seen a single episode of Game of Thrones. I'd never watched it.
Okay.
In 2016, I binged the entirety of Game of Thrones. So I'm all caught up. Like I saw every episode. Okay, good. But part of that is just that, like, I knew I would eventually watch it. When it came to Breaking Bad, I did the exact same thing. Like, the series was right before the final season of Breaking Bad, I binged the entirety of the show.
Yeah.
And the point sort of being that, like, now you have the capability to catch up on a show that you know is good and to avoid the experience of people who suffered through something like Lost, okay, which you knew was going bad. Like, you knew it was going bad, but you were so invested. You had put so much time.
You had to finish.
Exactly. You had to keep watching it. I hate that, and I try to avoid that experience. And I think everybody would be better off if we just did that, because I think in this case, Walking Dead is that show.
It's
that show that is not going to reward you for your investment of time.
Right, and it's funny, because I did the same thing with Breaking Bad. In fact, I almost didn't. I started to watch it, and I watched like the first four episodes, and I was thinking, and this is like after it was on for about three or four seasons, and I'm like, this isn't, I don't see the appeal here. I mean, it's good, but it's not great. And somebody was like, no, watch a few more episodes. I promise you, if you do that, get to like the sixth or seventh episode of the first season, and you'll be hooked. And sure enough, I was, and that was a fantastic show. I remember doing that with 24, actually. I didn't start watching 24 until about the fourth season. That was just a show that lasted too long.
The fourth season was the best season, though. The one with Marwan, that was the best season.
Yes, it was. The third and fourth seasons, I think, were the best. And and then it progressively, it just, the whole idea, actually, the season that they just did, where they finally said, okay, we're going to do away with the whole real-time thing. And it's still going to take place within a 24-hour period, but, you know, we're not going to have this thing where we're 15 minutes out. You know, they're always flying or driving somewhere. And so it actually wasn't bad. It wasn't great. I think it's kind of run its course. So hopefully.
Did you ever read the Television Without Pity recaps of 24?
No.
So this is a site that's now shuttered.
Oh.
But their recaps of 24 were written by some hilarious person, and they gave nicknames to everybody. And that one girl in the MCU, they nicknamed Potato Face fairly early on, and I could not ever like think of her as someone other than Potato Face throughout the extent of the series. And then when Sean Astin was on the show, and spoiler alert, dies in like a room for no particular reason, the recap I will never forget. Was, I'm glad to be here with you, Dave Coulier, here at the end of all things.
it was pretty like, It was pretty unceremonial the way that they made him die.
Yeah,
he was
just total. Oh yeah, yeah. Oh, now you're trapped in a room with poison. Now you're
that's it. You're done. Bye. They didn't give him the silent countdown or anything. Yeah,
exactly,
so
exactly no.
Let's see what a couple other shows here. Somebody Will Bush sure. says Fargo. That's actually a really good show. I only saw the first season. I haven't seen the other ones yet, but it was the first season was really good.
Wait a minute, wasn't the second season last year?
Was it last? Yeah, you're right. It probably was last year.
I think it was last year. I could be wrong, but I feel like it skipped a year because I love Fargo. Fargo's fantastic. I saw Fargo and I saw True Detective both on Blu-rays.
Okay.
And then I rewatched Fargo twice after that. Fargo was so rewarding compared to True Detective. I just found it far more rewatchable. The second season was not quite as good as the first, but the first was just so good. I mean, you know, how are you going to top that?
Yeah.
But I just love this idea that this is inspired by the Coen brothers, but you know, doesn't actually involve them.
Right.
And it evokes their world in very interesting sort of ways. The second season I feel like was a little bit more uneven than the first, but the music, the cinematography, the performances are all excellent. And frankly, this time around, I feel like Kirsten Dunst, you know, just sort of nailed that like ambitious, you know, Minnesota housewife kind of thing, who, you know, unwittingly kind of contributes to the doom of the people around her. So it was a very good season, but I'm pretty sure it was 2015 that it actually ran. So I'd need to look back and check that.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, I have to look at that too. All right, let's see. Two more here. There's Rana McNamara says The Crown. Andrea says HBO's Vice Principals, which kind of reminds me of Silicon Valley, which is an excellent show.
It is. I don't think they had their best season this year. But
no, they didn't. They didn't.
Vice Principals was very fun. Very fun. But, you know, obviously the episode with the principal stomping all over the car and yelling about Tanqueray was fantastic. I think of Vice Principals as kind of throwaway TV. not really the same level. But if you haven't seen The Crown, you really ought to.
Okay.
And not just because Lithgow's performance as Churchill is sort of surprisingly good. The guy is 6'4" and skinny as a bean, and he's somehow able, you know, with the aid of a fat suit and makeup, to pull off this challenging role. But it really is worth your time for a lot more reasons than that. And you know, Jared Harris is always good, you know, whatever he's in. There are a number of just kind of minor moments that I really love. There's a lecture that the Queen Mother at the time gives. About the importance of monarchy, that it's about 2 minutes long and it's just fantastic. It just sort of nails like what the aspirational sort of vision of monarchy really is. And I love it that Netflix is sort of getting into these, we're going to do partnerships with the BBC to do period pieces things. Like, that's great. Do more of that.
Yeah. And people have been talking about it. It's just another one that I haven't had a chance yet to check out, but I will definitely do that. Okay. Let's see. Let's go back. How about we shift over to music? I think I said at the beginning, there hasn't been a lot of music this year that's come out that I like. I am not a fan of Beyonce. I'm not a fan of, you know, a lot of popular music that comes out. Call me, you know, old fashioned or whatever. There is one band that they kind of put out an album that I thought was really good, St. Paul and the Broken Bones.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah.
Sea of Noise, which is really terrific. And it's probably the only thing I'm looking, I'm like, what has come out this year? I'm like looking around and I'm saying, okay, let me go look at some top lists. And I'm looking, I'm like, no, 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 no. And then here I'm going to do this and I don't care what anybody thinks, and people can laugh at me and they can laugh at me all I want. I don't care. I'm originally from New York, but I lived in New Jersey for 27 years, and I don't like Bruce Springsteen, but I have a soft spot for Bon Jovi, despite the fact that he left his stooge. But you know, I grew up listening to those guys, and they released a new album, and it's, hey, for the most part, it's standard Bon Jovi stuff, which is just kind of like average rock and roll, radio, very radio friendly music. But there's a couple different songs where they actually branched out in a little bit different direction, some stuff that they've never done before. So I thought it was really good. So I'm adding that to my list. You know, I'm a proud Bon Jovi fan, and I've been listening to it. But the St. Paul and the Broken Bones is really good. What about you? I mean, is there anything that you liked?
So when it comes to music, I feel like we should get a little bit more generosity and sort of the release to appreciation point. For instance, like there were several albums released in the fall of last year that I really enjoyed. Josh Ritter put out a really good album. The Strumbellas put out a really good album. There's, you know, every year I make these playlists for my family members, for my siblings and for their spouses and my mom and dad that collect various things. And what I kind of found this year was that a lot of the stuff I was pulling was from late 2015. Like there's, I just feel like a lot of the time it takes some time for some of this indie music to percolate up. You know, I mean, Lake Street Dive, for instance, you know, it took me forever to find out about them, you know, and just there's a lot of good groups that are currently out there doing good work. But I think that sometimes it takes a little bit of time for you to find, you know, that Band of Horses song that you really like,
sure,
or to find something along those lines. I feel like, you know, one of the things that we, you know, have lived through this past year is kind of an uneven music scene. But one of the things that I would just stress above all is that I think that Miranda Lambert is really entering her own. I think that she is owning kind of the country music scene right now and doing some incredible work that is not, you know, there's no rap in the middle of her songs. You know, this is stuff that is much more in keeping with Loretta and Dolly and everybody else, you know, who's come along. And I think that that's a very good sign for her. So if anything, I would just say, you know, Miranda Lambert has become, I have a greater appreciation for her now than I did maybe a year ago. And I think that she's going to continue to improve. When it comes to, you know, albums, I think honestly, the only album that I purchased this year that came out this year was the Stranger Things soundtrack. So I'm not sure that I'm, you know, in a position to judge. You know, again, there's a lot of different places out there. There are a lot of different bands out there that are doing good work. I just think it takes a little bit more time for it to percolate up because we're finding it via streaming and stuff like that, as opposed to, you know, listening to the radio and hearing, oh, here's the brand new song.
Right. Right. I think if you're talking about one of those ones that's kind of released late in the year, I don't even know when it was released exactly. Chris Stapleton. I'm not a big country music fan. I do like some country.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. I do like some classic country. I think Zac Brown is great. Of course, a lot of people would say they're not really country because they do all these other, you know, types of songs. But I mean, come on, you know, Homegrown is a country song. I mean, that's country. But Chris Stapleton, you know, that was one of those things where they actually did a performance with, what's his name from, they did it at the Country Music Awards last year. I forget it. The guy from NSYNC.
There was a good release. There was a good release from the Struts. There was a good release from, the Red Hot Chili Peppers. There was a good release, from the Stone Roses. And you know, they all had, you know, some good singles on there. And I think that, you know, people can check those out. Those are all 2016. But you know, it's the music scene right now, I think, is going through a period of transition where they're trying to figure out kind of what the major groups are going to be next. And, you know, I honestly have nothing against fans of Beyonce, but I find her music, and particularly the music that she released this year, to be very corporate. And not actually, I think that they see an authenticity that is faux authenticity. It's not really what she's like or what she thinks. And frankly, one of the reasons that I like Taylor Swift a lot is that I feel like the reverse is true with her.
Mm-hmm.
That this really is very raw and very her, and not something that was come together around the table. I mean, honestly, you go back to a song, you know, you go back to Lemonade, and you know it has, you know, a riff that's ripped off an old song, you know, and you have, you know, a main hook that was written by a different artist, and you have a main lyric that was written by a different artist. And it's just like, this is just an amalgamation of what you want to put together for this thing, as opposed to being an expression of yourself.
Right.
And, you know, I think that's always going to turn out lesser music.
Yeah. Oh, Chris Stapleton did perform Tennessee Whiskey with Justin Timberlake at the Country Music Awards last year in 2015. So that was who I was trying to think of before, and I had to go and look it up. All right, so yeah, I mean, for me, music has been, and you mentioned vinyl, and I've actually, that's what I've been doing probably for the last 18 months is kind of going out and getting as much as I can on vinyl. It's one of these things. There is a if you're ever in Atlanta and you get a chance, there's a place called Fantasyland Records in Buckhead, which is terrific. You can probably spend a few hours in there easily. Looking at the old
stuff. And a lot of money, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. It's very, very easy to, you know.
Oh, you know, Chevelle had a good song this year too, I think. Joyride.
Okay. Hmm.
Yeah. So there were a lot of bands that kind of came back, you know, and did something this year that was a little bit more interesting. But yeah, I hear you. It's one of these things where, you know, it's a crowded marketplace on the music side.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. Okay. So we'll move on to sports. You know, obviously a couple of big stories this year in sports, the Cleveland Cavaliers winning a championship, the Chicago Cubs winning the World Series. I mean, that has been, you know, 1908. I mean, that has got to be painful. And there are people who have lived entire lives not seeing the Cubs win a World Series.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So I, so we pre-taped Fox News Sunday this morning, and George Will was one of the fellow panelists on it. And he informed me that Mari, his wife, had for Christmas given him a gift of a 1908 champion banner that had flown above Wrigley Field.
Oh, wow.
And he said that he was very grateful for it, but that she also learned in the process the cost of getting into a bidding war with Cubs fans. So, you know, yeah, no, I mean, obviously that has to be considered the biggest story of the year. I mean, there's just no equivalent for it in our lifetimes.
Right.
You know, the Cubs winning in spite of Joe Maddon's decisions. you know, it really was. I mean, it was an amazing moment in a lot of ways. You know, certainly we can give, you know, credit to the Cleveland Cavaliers and everything like that. They do, of course, though, have the best player in the league, you know, and so I think that sort of mitigates it just a little bit in the sense that it's a little less surprising. But frankly, I have to say, I think one of the biggest stories of this year when it comes to the world of sports is the downfall of ESPN, which has long been thought of as being immortal in the world of TV, and you know that there was nothing that could ever knock it off. It's never, you know, they could ever knock it off the kind of success that they've had, and yet they've been losing subscribers hand over fist.
Right.
I feel like that's in terms of a longer running storyline about the world of sports and media, I feel like that's a huge story and something that's going to continue in the new year, and isn't just about Colin Kaepernick. It's about a lot more. It's about their programming. It's about their approach to covering sports in this kind of hype promotional way. And I think it's going to continue to be a problem for them.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. CNN SI, they used to have their own sports station. This goes back probably 10 years. They should have waited. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I think if they would have launched now as an alternative to ESPN, you just want to see, I can't watch it. I don't watch it ESPN anymore. And it's like, I used to, you know, SportsCenter was like a staple in my house. You know, I didn't turn on Morning Joe. I turned on SportsCenter because I wanted to see all the highlights, and I won't watch it anymore. But you know, CNN had theirs, and I used to watch that. And
What we've seen grown up in recent years almost is the success of other entities covering sports that are almost a parody of the ESPN model. I mean, you know, the number one sports podcast this year was Pardon My Take, which is this basically, you know, a parody of what ESPN does and the way that they cover sports in a really hilarious way. And by two people who are thoroughly juvenile, but have their own unique patois when it comes to the language they use, and in ways that kind of perversely imitate the ESPN model, but mock it on a level that is very it's just very revealing about kind of what goes on behind the scenes, and you know, it reveals the just sort of the insufficiency of all the sports programming that they have. You know, for instance, one of the things that they did was that after this past summer, there was a day in which Mike and Mike in the Morning on ESPN really didn't have anything to talk about. There wasn't any new sports stuff to talk about. There was very little in that world. And so they spent about half an hour arguing about which fruit you ought to wash. And so Pardon My Take's approach to imitating this is that every interview guest that they have on, including, you know, serious football players and, you know, people like Mike Pereira and, you know, major league stars and stuff like that, they ask them if they wash their apples or not. And then they critique their decision about whether they wash their apples. You know, well, what does that reveal about you? It shows that you're, you know, like weak or scared of germs or something like that, you know? Similarly, you know, they had this summer, they had their Mount Rushmores. The Mount Rushmores would be, you know, your top four of various things. And it started fairly normally, you know, your Mount Rushmores of backup quarterbacks or something like that. But by the end, it was your Mount Rushmore of numbers or your Mount Rushmore of days. And the fact that somebody picked Wednesday was a point of contention and argument. So it starts to kind of reveal to you, wow, you know, a lot of the sports radio and sports coverage I listen to is pretty stupid and really just goads the audience into responding to stuff that isn't all that interesting or serious or applicable to the games. So I think ESPN has a real problem on their hands, and I think that's the biggest sports story of the year.
And it's funny because ESPN at one time would be one of these stations, I think, that, you know, like HBO, where they said, okay, you know what, if you don't have cable and you don't have an HBO subscription, we have this, you know, HBO Now, which you can buy separately, and I think we're going to see a lot more of that. ESPN mm-hmm. might have been one that said, people would have been like, yeah, I'll pay for that. But I'm guessing there's still some diehards, but I wouldn't pay for it.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't either.
Yeah, wouldn't matter to me. All right, you know what? We're going to, let's wrap it up. I had such a great time. I don't feel like ruining it with politics. So the hell with the political stories. I had much more fun talking about the pop culture stuff. Let's see. Let's do this. And this is just kind of out of left field. What make a and it doesn't have to be politically related. It doesn't matter what it is. Make a big prediction for 2017.
Oh, okay. My prediction for 2017. Let's see. I think that in 2017, I think the Trump administration will have at least one cabinet member that does not survive the first year. He will fire somebody before the first year is over. Hmm. And for incompetence or for doing something stupid on TV, he will fire a cabinet member before the first year is out. That's my prediction for 2017.
Okay.
This is not a guy who hesitates at all if he thinks someone is weak or compromised or you know, incapable of doing their job. And I think that he's going to apply that to his own cabinet.
So there you have it. Somebody in Trump's cabinet is not going to survive the first year of a Trump administration. So that's going to be interesting to watch. I kind of brought this up, and now I don't even have any idea of what to pick here. I will.
You can come on, man. You can come up with something.
Here's what I think. Here's what I think.
Oh, I have another one.
Okay.
Okay. A Kardashian will ruin another man's life. Now, keep in mind, you could have made that prediction for the last 10 years.
Yeah,
they
won't
every
even
single year.
Yeah, they won't even give you odds in Vegas on that one, you know. Like, sorry, you're going to have to put up $1 million to win a buck, you know.
Fair point.
But I would here's the prediction I'm going to make is that people, especially conservatives, are going to be disappointed with the Supreme Court nominee that Donald Trump chooses. That's what I think. I think he is somebody who is like, you know, he's talked about he's going to nominate somebody in the Scalia mold, but Trump does what he likes to do.
So I will push back against you with this. Let me just suggest this. I would suggest that your prediction will be correct about the second nomination.
Okay.
I feel like the first one, he feels the need to reward his conservative supporters, and he's going to stick to his list.
Okay.
But I think the second one, it's no holds barred. It could be anybody, you know, and so if Ruth Bader Ginsburg croaks in the next year, then I feel like you're going to end up with a really crappy nominee. But I think this first one, is going to be okay.
Okay.
We'll see. You might be right.
We'll see about that. Okay. All right. Well, Ben Domenech, thank you so much. You know, for joining me. We actually went a lot longer. We were kind of talking about 30, 40 minutes. We talked for about an hour.
Yeah.
But that's sorry okay. No.
There was a lot to talk about. This was a big year, man.
It was a good year. I know a lot of people talk about 2016. And if you talk about, you know, I think there was some breaking news that Carrie Fisher had a heart attack while she was on an airplane. You know, when you look at the people that, you know, we've lost musically, and you know, people in, you know, Muhammad Ali passed away, and Prince died.
It's very sad, but I just have to say, keep in mind, we also, you know, lost Rolling Stone and Gawker and Amy Schumer's career. So those are
there.
Also
you go. It all balances out. Yes, it all balances out. Well, Ben, thanks again for being on. It was great. I think people are going to like this. And let me say to you and your family and your girlfriend and everybody, I hope you have a wonderful Christmas and a great new year. And, you know, the Federalist is doing terrific. You guys are just doing some great work over there. I read it every day, and, you know, I contributed there, and I'm proud to contribute there. It's great. So
thank you, Jay. Merry Christmas to you as well.
All right, everyone. That is going to do it. We will see you next time here on Fifth State in 2017.
Kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas.